reflecting on the ending of our first full day and night of practice together. Noticing how we are, especially any views about how it's going. Encourage us to be particularly conscious of opinions or views that we have, the way that we assess ourselves and assess the retreat, assess the world. Can we be conscious of that thought and the feeling that's associated with that thought as it arises and ceases? Can we recognize it for what it is, an opinion? Sometimes when we don't see that it's an opinion, it very much becomes me. Becomes the truth. And even if it is true, it's true for a moment. What we call me is shifting and changing all the time. The circumstances of this retreat are shifting and changing all the time. So let's be conscious of these views and opinions. And notice how easy it is to get hypnotized by them and forget that they're arising and ceasing within this presence, this knowing, this awareness, using different words, knowing, presence, awareness, to call attention to what we're cultivating, a refuge, a more secure, a more trustworthy, a more steady place to abide. We might not know that yet, but in faith, with a certain amount of trust, even though we don't know it, maybe we're following the guidelines that the ancients, the wise ones of old, the enlightened one, the Buddha, who's our teacher, we're following the guidelines that he laid down. So we might not know where they go, but we can at least with our discernment reflect, is what we're doing harmful? These guidelines aren't asking us to jump off a cliff, though it might seem like it. It might seem like a precipice, like a drastic change from our ordinary life. Perhaps our ordinary life is filled with phone calls and faxes and appointments and deadlines and crises and perhaps stopping, closing our eyes, and sitting on a cushion. Nice for a 5-minute nap, but maybe after an hour, 2 hours, an afternoon, a night in a strange place, morning and another afternoon, maybe it does seem like jumping off a precipice. No reference point, what we used to consider how we are. But with a certain amount of faith, trust in this ancient method of withdrawing from our ordinary activities for the sake of getting into perspective. this tendency for the consciousness to stream out and seek its abiding, seek its dwelling, seek its satisfaction in external things. Not that there's anything bad about it. Certainly what's called the sense pleasures, the pleasures through the senses. The Buddha acknowledged that there's a pleasure there. He didn't deny it. But he encouraged us to comprehend them. There's the pleasure of seeing that which is beautiful, that which pleases us, hearing that which is delightful, soothing, interesting, exciting, smelling that which is fragrant to us, that which uplifts us, that which puts us in a mood, that which arouses us, tasting that which pleases us, that which we savor, feeling the contact with the body. The Buddha never denied that there's pleasure. If you're cold and you find a warm place and let the sun on our skin warm us, one comes out of a winter. There's no deny that that's pleasing. But the Buddha encouraged us to really reflect on the pleasing, on the pleasures that come externally like that. He said that the samadhi, I'm using the word the Buddha used, samadhi, the gatheredness of heart, the unification of heart, the steadiness of heart, that's cultivated in meditation. The Buddha said this is impossible to cultivate if we can't withstand sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches, impressions. Withstand. If we can't bear cultivation of samadhi is not just about sensory deprivation. If our gatheredness of mind depends solely on just not having anything bother us, that's a very limited steadiness of heart. That's why we also have walking meditation. We have contact, we're alive, so we will see. We do hear it indoor. We do smell, we do taste, we do have things contacting, hot and cold and soft and rough, pleasant and painful. What does it mean to be able to withstand? Well, if we see something beautiful and immediately we get excited, ah, and then chase after that, and hear a nice sound, what was that? Was that a peacock? Go hear the peacock. I think I heard a donkey. Go hear the donkey. What kind of plane was that? Was that a military operation? Wonder what sorts of dogs they have at the hospital. Nothing wrong with that, but notice how they take us over here. Take us over here. Take us over here. Nothing wrong with it. Go where we're interested. But what happens if we can't go where we're interested? Oh, that's too cold. Sometimes we can't change it. Oh, it's too hot. Sometimes we can't change it. Oh, it's too painful. Sometimes we can change it. but to contemplate the limitation of if we have to have it pleasing with the sight, pleasing with the sound, pleasing with the smell, pleasing with the taste, pleasing with the feeling. We're very vulnerable to change. And the attention gets swept around. So to withstand, not that these things are bad, but in this particular training, we're learning for a time to withdraw the fascinations. Not that we don't notice stuff, we notice it. But we're learning to, if it's pleasing or displeasing, to notice that, but to watch the tendency to have to race over here and race over there. To withstand it if it's pleasing, withstand it if it's displeasing, and withdraw the attention to establish ourselves here. It's a particular training called viveka. Because there's a limitation in having to have things, having a pleasing abiding so dependent on external things. We're very vulnerable. And those pleasures are so fleeting, so ephemeral, so changeable, so fragile. And also they lead to a fever. Fever of wanting again, wanting again, wanting again. And they create the sense of poverty in here. Poverty inside and need something to see. Need something to hear. Need something to feel. Create a sense of poverty in the present moment and lead to this momentum in time of going to hold on to that which is external. Again, it's not evil, it's just, it's for us to reflect on. Just to reflect. The Buddha said again, this samadhi, this gatheredness of heart does not happen. It's impossible for it to occur in someone who doesn't reflect on the limitations of sense pleasures. Limitations. Meaning they have an upside and a downside. So when there's a sense of the limitation, then for a moment we can encourage our heart to just let go for right now, having to go over there and just check that out, having to check that out. We feel a weariness, a nice taste and it finishes, another nice taste and it finishes. Another nice taste in the finish. Nothing wrong with nice tastes. But it's a fever. It doesn't end. When there's a certain weariness with that, then there's a possibility of the attention to turn back and start to cultivate a different sort of abiding. This is very, very important. What I'm talking about was the turning point in the Buddha's awakening. It's a turning point. Remember yesterday I referred to him going forth from the palace when he was young, 29 years old. He had all the pleasures, the best. The best of sights. Only those that were pleasing were allowed around the young prince. Father wanted him to have the best. His mother died when he was only 7 days old. Father wanted him to have the best. Beautiful people around him. Pleasant colors. Pleasant smells. The best food. Even so, the limitation of that arose to the fore. Recognized that even so, that those were impermanent. He still was subject to aging, sickness, aging, death. And if something welled up from within, there must be something more meaning here. He went forth. At first, he studied with the great yogis of the day. He studied very, very refined states of concentration. Almost like, well, what he was in the palace was so worldly. Form, food, sights, smells, beautiful women. He had his first yogic teachers taught him the otherworldly. He was taught very, very refined concentrations of what's called the realm of nothingness and the realm of neither perception nor non-perception. It was very refined. Going into a state where there's no body. Very, very, don't even recognize a sense of body. Very refined. I don't know, but I suspect it was something to do with the opinion. The young prince, the seeker, had the opinion, yes, that what was holding him back was this world of change. You have to somehow get beyond it. Go to this ultra-refined place of no form, not even any thought. Just, you couldn't even say it's perception, you couldn't even say it's not perception, so subtle. But he noticed, even though he accomplished those concentrations, he noticed he came back down. He realized that this wasn't what he was looking for. It didn't solve his doubts. It didn't ease his restlessness. For a time, he went to very refined, pleasing places. Then he went through a phase where he thought, oh, maybe I'm coming down because this link with the body, link with form, attraction to pleasure. So he took a stand against pleasure, started torturing himself, starving himself. At one point, he even decided breathing was just luxurious. And practiced the non-breathing meditations. He had tremendous equanimity, tremendous willpower, tremendous vigor, tremendous patience. He'd even stop breathing and notice, when I don't breathe that long, slicing pains go through my chest. If I stop longer, slicing, burning pains go through my head. And stop it even longer, slicing. At some point, he realized there is no one who's putting more effort in than me. And yet, I'm exhausted. I'm sick. When I go to urinate, I fall on my face. When I scratch my skin, the hair comes out by the roots. When I scratch my stomach, I feel my backbone. So he checked in and thought the arising of honest reflection happened. This is not working. But he really took it to the extreme. He had pleasure to the extreme in the palace. He had asceticism, pain, deprivation to the extreme. Realized it didn't, clutching at the beautiful, these are these sense pleasures I'm talking about, sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touches. When he had the best, tried to hold on to them, still brought frustration. When he pushed away the world, pushed away pleasure, learned to tolerate extreme pain and deprivation. There was willpower, but there wasn't ease. And he knew, I've not accomplished what I wanted. He said, might there be another way? This is before the Buddha's awakening. He shared this after. Then he had the memory of when he was a child. And it was a big festival day. His father, the king, or the head of their tribe, there was some sort of plowing festival, some sort of special day, maybe around the planting season and the fertility of the earth. I'm not sure exactly what it was. It's called a plowing festival in the texts. So there was a lot of activity, probably talks, music, dancing, celebrations. This is a memory. The 35-year-old Buddha, pre-Buddha, he hadn't been awakened yet, but he'd been struggling for 6 years. He remembered back, and he remembered that he withdrew, same word, viveka. He withdrew from the big festival. He didn't say he shouted at him, "You guys are wasting your time. Oh, God, look at you all making all that kind of racket." Didn't say anything like that. He just withdrew. Didn't make a big scene. He withdrew to the shade of a tree. Even said the name of the tree. It was a rose apple tree. And he remembered that in his youth, he withdrew the hankering for the festival. He let that go. And he also let go aversion for the busyness. This wasn't a place of aversion, wasn't a place of hankering or desiring, longing. Another word for hankering is longing. We put down longing and aversion and allowed his young, innocent, fresh mind of youth to just be with his body. He was with the in-breath and the out-breath. And he experienced what's called the first abiding. Technical language that the Buddha spoke, it's called the first jhana, first absorption, the natural state of rapture and pleasure. Or rapture's a, in English at least, it's a bit of a big word. I mean, maybe refreshment would be better. Refreshment. Or joy. A better word, that filled him. And the pleasure was an ease, a relaxation. And this joy and ease were born of withdrawal. That means they emerged from the attention which was scattered outward, let that go, and then turned back to what? To unify itself on just this simple experience of embodiment, the here, now experience of having a body. And what does this body do? To survive, it breathes in. It takes in a nourishment, a food. This is a very subtle food. It breathes in and breathes out. And this rapture and pleasure born of withdrawal was accompanied by directed thought and evaluative thought. What's called vitakka vichara. Directed thought and, again, the translations are difficult. But I'm going to spend some time this evening to talk about these factors which help us do this process of withdrawing and turning the attention back. There are different factors, different qualities which support this practice. The first is this directed thought. It's called vitakka. Thought directs your attention. If I think, oh, I wonder what's happening back on our mountain. Is our dog all right? He's 12 years old, you know. He's had 4 operations. He's the oldest member of the Sangha back there. Oh, I'm really fond of him, and I'm worried. I wonder how he's doing. That all came out of a thought. The thought going to the mountain. But then I think, oh, my father, 62 years with my mom. Wonder how he's doing now without her sitting in that chair. Hope he's doing all right. I think his granddaughter's with him now. Notice the thought goes to my home in Tennessee. Your thought can go back to home. It can go to tomorrow. Oh, gee. Are my legs going to hold up? What if I seize up? Can't get out of the cross-legged position. They might have to carry me out. I wonder if anyone's literally frozen up in the posture. So thoughts can guide our attention. In this case, we're using thought as a tool. Thought is not an enemy. Yes, and the more as our meditation progresses, we learn how to use thought for what we want, and we learn how to let it go. But if you make thought an enemy and just think it's just suddenly going to stop, it's a problem. We train thought. Thought becomes a tool that we use. And just as a gardener has a rake, has a shovel, but a gardener doesn't have to carry the rake and the shovel into the dining room, doesn't have to carry it into the bedroom, doesn't have to carry it into the bathroom. You say, well, what do you do? Well, you never know when you might need it. I know, but usually you don't use a rake in the bathroom. Isn't that a lot of trouble? You say, oh, that's a good idea. And you could put them down. So thinking, we learn how to use it, and in learning how to use it, then we also learn how to put it down. Directed thought is a very important teaching the Buddha gave. We use thought to direct us here. That's a directed thought. Oh, I wonder what's happening here, now. Do you think they fed my dog tonight? You say, as Tanisra said, not now. Nothing you can do from this distance. Here, now. See, let that go. Using a thought to bring the attention where you want it to be. This is a part of 1 jhana. Don't think thoughts have to be a problem. Even in the first jhana, even in the first deep blue chip stock, the first real classical level of peacefulness, there is thought. Don't think thought's a big problem. Question is, learning to let your thought help you. Let the thoughts direct you to the body. Let the thoughts notice, hey, I'm breathing in. Let the thought be breathing out. Now, if it's only thought, if it's only directed thought, it's out of balance. Like if someone you meet on the street says, how are you? It's really nice to see you. Wow, you're really looking like this. You really look like that. And you can't have a chance to say anything. And you think, God, they don't even see me. Their attention's on you, but it's just bom, 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 bom. If they said, how are you, that means their attention's your attention's on someone. Then what is it that then allows you to receive their faith? And actually notice, gee, their eyes are bloodshot. Oh, they're exhausted. Because you've looked. The thought, the directed thought brings you there. And then there's this other quality the Buddha called vichara. Vitaka is what the Buddha called the directed thought. Then vichara is the feeling it out. It's the bonding, the making contact. One is the yang, the male. It's not really male, but it's a way of talking. The male, the going out. And then the other is more feminine, or the more yin, or the more receptive. The two are very important together. So, for example, when you say, here, now, that directs your thought, here, now. But if you just keep telling it, breathe, 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 Going to rapture. Going to rapture. Come on, get in there. It's a lot of vitaka, and you get points for that. There's energy in vitaka. But you're tense, and you've not really met anybody. You've not met yourself. You say, here now, and then the feminine. Or another way of talking about it is, what we're talking about is your awareness. Your attention says, here now, then the awareness feels out. How is it? So, what does it feel like to be pressing on the cushion? What does it feel like to be breathing in? What does it feel like to be breathing out? And you start to lose it. Vitaka brings you back. Oh, I'm sitting. Steady. Steady. And then you feel it out. The two go together. And they're just two words for what's really a process that works together. Some have described it like a thumb and an index finger. If you're going to pick something up, the two help hold it and feel it out. First two qualities that help us develop the samadhis, directing the mind here, feeling out and exploring. What are we exploring? The body breathing. It's what's called the breath. The breath is a noun. A noun. In English, breath sounds like a thing. A noun is a grammatical word. But actually, it's a process. So breathing is more. And if you talk about watching the breath just as a visual image, it's not so good sometimes because it makes it look like the breath's over there and you're over here. So it gets a split. So I would say it's just sometimes the way we perceive what we're doing affects how it feels. So I encourage us. One thing in English that sometimes helps me is the idea of being with the breathing. Being with the body breathing. And remember, the breathing, we first meet it as the air comes in the nostrils. Or we know we're breathing because we notice that something's happening there. Or if we've got a cold, maybe we notice that some air is coming in our mouth. Or maybe we notice that the chest moves and expands and contracts and the abdomen moves. But if we think we've got to, that what this meditation is somehow squeezing what's out there into the body and pumping it out and sucking it in and pumping it out, and we think, oh, that's a lot of work. Being with breathing, it's a natural process. And the element, in the way the Buddha spoke, the element that we're looking at is the vibratory element. It's called vayodhatu. Actually, the whole body is vibrating. The whole body is breathing. The way the Buddha, what he was talking about, was not just the air. Yes, something very, it's certainly connected that when you close off your nostrils, if you close off your mouth, that you definitely affect this vibratory process. If you can't find your breath, just stop. I'm not breathing now. It's been 10 seconds that I'm not breathing. Everything's fine. 15 seconds. Everything's hunky-dory. I don't know what these nostrils are. Uh-oh. Starting to feel. What's that feeling? You feel your whole body. And then take a breath. Notice the flush. It's not just a flush in the lungs. There's a flush. Flush of vibration, feeling that goes into the cells, into the blood. Sometimes if you can't find your breath, stop breathing for a minute. Sometimes if you can't establish yourself, take a deep breath. It starts, okay, this process starts by noticing the in and out movement. That's how it starts. Someone was asking today about the introductory tip. The introductory tip that the Buddha gave was, sit yourself down. Establish mindfulness. Notice when you breathe in long. Notice when you breathe in out long. I think this is because when we're more agitated, when we're not very concentrated, at first we notice our breath is in a more long way. But sometimes with anxiety in this modern world, the way we get, sometimes our breath gets very shallow, not because we're peaceful, because we're tense. Then it's useful to take this first stage of breathing. Take conscious, our teacher Ajahn Chah used to suggest this, conscious, long breath. Quiet, deep breath, so you're directing the mind to do that. You have to direct the mind to the body and then feel the breath, the breathing. Come in long. Feel the sensation. Feel the opening of the chest. And then feel the breathing out long and especially relaxing the forehead and the face and the shoulders and the armpits and the abdomen and the lower back and the hips. Breathing in long. Breathing out long. Don't strain too much, but notice. When you do this, notice how it affects you. Notice if breathing in and breathing out long is nice. Just notice that. What I want to emphasize about this, I got a bit carried away, but when the Buddha remembered that memory, when the young seeker that hadn't been enlightened yet remembered that child under the tree that withdrew and went into that peacefulness, he realized this is the path. This is the path. Why am I afraid of this pleasure? This pleasure is a pleasure that is skillful. It's not depending on running this way and running that way. It's a pleasing abiding that's skillful. It's independent. Yes, if I attach to it, that might lead to some stress. But he knew it was the right path to go. But he also knew, I can't do that sort of meditation. I can't do what I did as a child unless I eat something. He was so sick, he realized he needed to get a little strength back. Tanisra likes to say that this was a turning point in the Buddha realizing that enlightenment was not a question of hating form. It's not grasping at form, but it's not hating form. It was an honoring of the feminine, an honoring of form. Yes, there's spirit, but if you just think enlightenment is just getting beyond form and going up, 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 boom, breaking through the ceiling, and then we're laughing. He tried. He went up. He kept coming down, and he thought, gee, more pain, and then I'll break through. Then he just got sick. Then he realized it's not grasping form, it's not rejecting form. This is why it's the middle. It's comprehending form, understanding form. Being right here with this body breathing. And so this was a pleasure principle. This is the part of the Buddha's teaching where he encouraged us, his disciples, to learn how to cultivate little by little a pleasure that's harmless, that doesn't exploit anyone, that leads to a pleasing abiding here and now, number one. Number two, it allows us then to be alert and mindful. From this abiding, we can do what we do. We can be present for our life. We can be clear and in touch with our life. Second blessing. Number three, it can lead to knowledge and vision. In more refined ways, when our mind is more concentrated, we can see things very clearly that we couldn't see. But most importantly, which we'll look at later in the retreat, when we learn how to enjoy and be gathered and fully present and at ease in the here and now, we can use that mind to see the cause of suffering. We can see and realize and comprehend the causes of birth and death. So today, directing our mind to the present, staying connected to the present, the third quality which helps us is called rapture. That's too strong a word sometimes for us to understand, because I'm not feeling rapture. How do you get there? The seed of rapture is to be filled with. It means to give space for. It means to learn to enjoy. Or like soup. If you're taking soup up, you savor it. You taste it. Now, in the case of rapture, if you're impatient for rapture, where is the rapture? Then there's no space. You're leaning. Where's that rapture? Let's just try a little harder. Where's that rapture? We're leaning. Rapture comes when there's relaxing and being filled with. So even if there's an ache or even if there's a pain, if we learn to breathe in and savor that, be with that, relax with that, little by little the energy can well up. So rapture connects with the next factor, which is called ease or relaxation. It's a very important in meditation. You can get concentrated with a lot of stress and strain, but it's not the kind of concentration that the Buddha recommended has the best results. It doesn't bless the body. You can get concentrated on rage, as we know, in this part of the world. You get concentrated, tremendous energy, but how much blessing is in it? Relaxing. 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 So the skillful means that the Buddha taught is sometimes beginning by breathing in long, breathing out long. Notice how that affects us. And at first, and then in time, as we start to get more steady and established, the breathing might become more shallow. Naturally, not because we're stopping the breath, but because it's calming down. So in this practice, we're encouraging ourselves to learn how to breathe in a way that feels comfortable. So let's explore. If we're tensed up, some deep breathing helps us relax. As we breathe in, let the attention explore and feel out the body. As we breathe in, notice if the belly is tense. We breathe out, relaxing the belly, feeling the belly. We breathe in, noticing the lower back if it's tense. Breathe in and out in a way that allows us to relax the back. We can breathe in and out, exploring the chest. Breathe in and out in a way that allows us to relax. Breathe in and out, noticing how it feels in the nostrils, in the head. Breathing in and out in a way that allows us to relax. This is not just my ideas. The Buddha encouraged us to notice the long breath. He encouraged us to be mindful of a short breath. And he encouraged us to train ourselves to learn to breathe in sensitive to the whole body. So as we learn to stay with the body and to relax, we learn how to let that feeling spread through the body. This is where the Qigong helps so much. The Qigong helps us get a feeling for an embodied awareness, a full body awareness. Awareness begins maybe with in a certain part of the body, and that's all right. That establishes us in the present. But as this practice develops, it's good to allow the attention to expand so that our capacity for ease and pleasure has more of a base, more of a grounding, more of a root, more of a support. The image that the Buddha gave. He gave an image. He oftentimes would give us an image to help us see what we're doing in meditation. He said that imagine that there's a bath man. In the old days when you would get a bath in India, you'd go to a place where they had hot water. And the bath man or his apprentice, his helper, they would have a lovely brass bowl. Beautiful glow. Lovely. I imagined it to be nice and round. And in it would be crystals or powder that was fragrant, different oils, but it was dry. And in this image, the Buddha said, it's like taking water and sprinkling it into that powder, into those crystals. So it's flaky. It's got pieces in it, chunks in it. And the bathman or the bathman's apprentice would knead it, would start working the water into the powder, into the crystal. He keeps sprinkling it so that it didn't drip out. The powdered crystals, the fragrant powdered crystals would hold that moisture. And it would start to become something different. Start to create something fragrant. Something that was permeated. That moisture permeates every part as the bathman or the bathman's apprentice kneaded, massaged it. So that it then becomes able to cleanse. It becomes a different substance. In the same way, the Buddha said, when you withdraw from chasing this and chasing that, when you withdraw the attention back to this body, you then can enjoy a rapture and a pleasure born of that withdrawal, born of that withdrawal, accompanied by this thought, this directing thought, this thought that keeps us here, breathing in, breathing out, accompanied by this, whatever I call that other quality, that receptive quality, what the Buddha called vichara. It's sometimes translated as evaluation. This pleasure and rapture born of withdrawal accompanied by those two. And then the Buddha said there's no part of this body that's not suffused, permeated, drenched. Every part of the body is drenched with that feeling of ease, that feeling of refreshment, of enjoyment. And the last quality is ekagata. There's a unity. It's a unity. It becomes the mind fills the body. The body fills the mind. In the same way, this lovely bowl is like our awareness. Our awareness, our presence is the bowl. Everything's inside this bowl. Our presence of now. The body, when it's not very noticed, is like the dry powder. You've got shoulders, the one's up here and one's down here, and my hip, I can notice my hip all right. Don't have trouble finding that. And my right knee, I tell you what, I'll never lose my right knee. It's burning. Can't find my left foot. It went to sleep hours ago. So it all seems different. It's disconnected. That's like the powder. Then when you sprinkle moisture, that's moments of noticing. We notice the shoulder. Breathe in, noticing the shoulder. Ah, that's a bit tense. Can I breathe in and relax the shoulder? Ah. Starting to see how the shoulder is connected to the hand. The shoulder is connected to the chest. Breathing in, the sprinkling the water, and then kneading. What are the hands kneading? Kneading so that it works the moisture into the powder. That's what the breath does. The breath is like the hands. Breathing in, and then breathing out, relaxing. As we breathe in, we notice the sensation of the breath at the nostril, the sensation at the chest, the sensation at the belly. As we relax, we little by little allow these sensations to connect, to flow into one another. Little by little. Little by little. And just as we, the apprentice or the bathman needs that moisture so that it permeates and suffuses, as we do this practice, we allow ourselves to be with the body. Relax with the body. Enjoy the body. Finding an ease that's not dependent on being anywhere in particular. Yes, the mind gets pulled out somewhere else. But we remember, do I want to always have to be in a fever? Always to have to be able to chase things in order to find pleasure? Wouldn't it be better to learn how to, for now, let that go, for the sake of little by little patiently learning to find an ease that's just happy to be here, now, in this awareness. Please be patient with this process for the rest of our life. Little by little, learning how to establish ourselves here. Little by little, get a little more skilled at relaxing. Little by little, getting a little more skilled at in moments, whether we're waiting in line at the shop, whether we're at home. Just little by little to become skilled at being able to enjoy the simplicity of just being. This is a wonderful skill, so let's be patient. If we're not perfect, never mind. We'll use whatever skill we have to see things the way they are. But for this first couple of days, before we try to figure everything out, if we figure things out, sometimes we just end up thinking in knots, thinking in circles, just thinking. The first few days at least, I encourage us to say, not now, just for the sake of this withdrawing, using thought as a tool to point us back to this moment, to this body, praising this quality of being awake. We started the evening with a mantra, Om Tayata Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Soha, praising the quality that we're cultivating, this quality of presence, quality of wisdom, quality of being able to be at peace here now. Praise that. Let that flush through the body. That can also help us enter meditation. tomorrow we'll be talking more about how the recitations, the chanting, can help us develop these qualities of enjoyment and ease, these blameless qualities. But I think if I do it tonight, it's been a long day. I'm revved up. I probably could talk for another hour easy. But I have a feeling that the assembly might start fading out. Anyway, thank you all for patience today. My intention is to encourage us to stay with it. This, we are fortunate. This is a wonderful path. I'm delighted we can do this together. So let's persevere. Let's be patient with our aches and pains. Rest if one needs to. As we rest, let's be with the body. Enjoy feeling of being at ease as we lie down. As we go to sleep, just feel the body as it's breathing. Feel the body as it's resting. Feel the body as we walk back. See if we can relax and have moments, just moments, of being at ease with whatever the feeling is. This is my encouragement for tonight. Thank you for a lovely day.